Hello.
Hello.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. How are you?
Right, I'm not too bad. So as you can hear, I've got another guest. This is Jordan Baxter. He's fighting on the Cage Warriors Academy 8-man tournament. I'm going to let Jordan introduce himself and let you know his record and stuff. Fire away.
Hello. My name is Jordan Baxter. I fight out of IPC in Wrexham. My combined record is 10-3.
Good stuff. And as I've done a podcast with some of the other guys already, from what I've seen, you're the only one with an actual nickname.
Oh, yes. Well, I don't know about that. On my Facebook page, I think I'm down as Jordan, the Renegade Baxter.
Yeah.
In truth, it's not so much a nickname that I would go by, actually, when it comes to fighting. It's just one that I chose to make the Facebook page, you know, unique for when people want to search it and try and find it. And I have the same walkout song every time I fight, which is called Renegade. So, yeah, it just kind of stuck.
Yeah, it's good. It's part of your image.
Yeah, I suppose. I think a couple of them have their own little nicknames. I think Warren's down as Warren the Tank, and
Jack. Yeah, I haven't actually spoke to him yet.
So there's a couple that I've got their own little brand going on.
So, as for the tournament, have you done anything like this before, like three fights in one night?
No, not as far as MMA goes or as far as official fights go. I did judo growing up, and obviously that's competition style. You might have, you know, five fights in one day. Same with obviously like interclubs or grappling comps. I've done plenty of those. But as far as actual MMA event goes, no, I suppose I've never had more than one fight in the night. It's a relatively unique circumstance and one that I'm looking forward to.
So have you trained any different to prepare yourself for the three fights in one night? Because obviously normally you get an opponent and you get a few weeks to train for that specific one person. Have you trained any different for three fights in one night?
No, I wouldn't say I've trained any different. It's in the back of my mind that the fight is only two rounds, well, unless it goes to a split one round apiece, in which case you go to a third round, the only exception being the final, where it's a three-round fight. You know, with that in mind, it does mean that you can go certainly harder in the first two rounds. You don't have to, because if you win both of them, then you've won the fight. But, you know, I've had other fights lined up as well, and I've been keeping quite active, so I've had plenty to concentrate on. So I wouldn't say I've changed anything too specifically for this tournament.
Good stuff. So have you looked into any of the other guys in it and stuff like that? I know some of yous know each other, and a few of yous might have fought each other before. Have you looked into their styles, how they fight, or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, I know the majority of them. Quite a few of them have been around in the circuit quite a long time, like myself. I know quite a lot of them are south-based. Now, I've not done too much fighting in the south of the country, so I haven't had the pleasure of meeting some of them. But yeah, after my research, I know about most of them. If I'm honest, I know what gyms they come from and maybe where they specialised. I think there's some real interesting matchups to be had. Maybe not just you know, for myself, I'm excited about fighting all of them. At the end of the day, the seven of the best flyweights and a couple of bantamweights, you know, in the country. So I'm happy to fight any of them. I'm also quite excited, almost as a fan, if you will, to see a couple of them fight and see how that goes.
Yeah, it's going to make for a good show. Like obviously, I done an interview with Brad Scott last week, who's training partners with Jack Eglin, and that's how I got onto it. And then I got asked by Craig to cover all the 8-man tournament, and I was like, oh, right, yeah, okay. So seeing all your different styles, the different gyms and stuff like that, it's obviously your different records and stuff. It's going to make for an exciting show because you've got one guy that's on an 8-fight win streak, and you've got another guy, Ashley, who's 7-0. And then you've got other people that the records are quite even. And Ben fought last night. Obviously, it didn't go his way, unfortunately. but people are staying active and stuff like that. So it's going to be fireworks. There's a lot, and obviously, it's like you said, it's the best flyweights in the UK.
Yeah, definitely. I think all of the competitors in their own right have got something to bring to this competition. Like say, you've got people like Warren Mason, Robbie Brown, who have both had, I think, over 20 MMA fights each. You know, they're probably two of the most experienced guys as far as MMA goes in the competition. Funny enough, they've both had 20 fights each. I don't think they've actually ever fought each other, even though they're both based sort of around the Midlands, Midlands north of the country. So that's quite surprising. You know, you've got some really decent strikers in the competition, like Jack Eglin, really quite a good boxer. Jack Temple as well, good striker. I don't know too much about Ben Miles. I think he's only been introduced into the tournament recently.
Yes.
I think he might have filled in for somebody else, so I'm afraid I haven't done too much research on him. Maybe it's a little bit ignorant of myself that I didn't already know who he is, because I'm sure he's a top athlete himself. But Ashley Kilvington, a bit more of a wrestler grinder from what I've seen. So, you know, a lot of people are bringing a lot of stuff.
And like I said, there's a lot of people that have got stuff to prove as well. Obviously, one of them's on a 3-fight loss streak. And then you've got two guys, one on an 8-fight, one on a 7-0. So, obviously, the 7-0 wants to keep his O there. And then the 8-fight win streak guy wants to keep it going. And then the person on the 3-fight win streak, he's got something to prove. It's something for everyone.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, nobody wants to lose, regardless of whether you're on a 7-fight win streak, 8-fight win streak, whether you're, you know, even if you're on a 3-fight loss streak, it doesn't really matter. Nobody wants to lose. Everybody's here to, prove something is one way of putting it. You know, they're here to fight. They're wanting to come away. Most of them will be looking at, I dare say, turning pro at some point in the future. So the main drawing point for me on this one was it's a good opportunity to get experience against some of the best guys in the country. All going well, I'll have 3 fights in one night against 3 of the top guys, and you know, you really can't turn down that the chance of that experience.
Yeah, that's the one of the questions I've asked all the guys that I've done podcasts with so far is when do you think you'll turn pro? Is like April 7th. So you win the tournament, obviously you get the belt, the money, and then you've got that name as the best flyweight in the UK. Are you going to stay and defend that, or are you going to make the jump to pro?
I've always had the same answer when sort of people ask me that, the question of, you know, will you go pro? I'll go as far as the sport is willing to sort of go with me. If I keep fighting and keep winning, then yeah, when the coaches say, look, we're ready, we'll turn pro. I'm not in a rush. There's more experiences to be had. I would much prefer to turn pro with the backing of a good, successful amateur career. And then move forward from there instead of, you know, trying to rush it. I don't really see any benefit in trying to rush the going pro. I think taking it slow and steady, so then by the time you do step into the cage as a pro, in my mind, you should have been put in just about every different scenario. You should have experienced just about everything in your amateur career, I suppose, bar elbows and 5-minute rounds. You should have experienced just about everything by the time you get in there, so nothing can surprise you. So, it's on the horizon, but yeah.
Yeah, that's what a lot of the guys have said. Like, because I asked if they see their amateur records, when they go pro, do amateur records count or anything like that? And the majority of them have said it should. They don't really like the ranking system or the record system, so to speak, for amateurs. It should be more of class as an experience thing, because obviously they see the amateurs as gaining as much experience as possible whilst you're in the amateur before you make the step up to pro, because you could have 10 fights as an amateur, win one of them and lose 9 of them. But then your coaches turn around and say, you've developed so much in them 9 fights, we think you're ready to go pro.
Yeah, I certainly see where you're coming from. I think it is important, as you say, to get as much experience as possible. And no, the record isn't the be-all and end-all. Of course, there's a lot to be said for taking momentum into the pro ranks, i.e. if you go into the pro ranks, you know, an undefeated fighter, let's say, with 8 title belts, you know, on different promotions, you go into the pro ranks when everybody knows your name as an amateur, that will certainly give you enough momentum to probably get you on some bigger and better shows, you know, straight off the bat, which is quite important. As you say, should there be as much emphasis on people's records amateur? Possibly not, but you've got to look at it on the other side, I suppose. Not everybody that fights actually wants to turn pro. A lot of people will do this just for a hobby and just for fun, and when that's the case, I think record to them is certainly quite important. So, you know, there's two sides of the coin.
It could be more of a personal thing to more of a professional thing. Like you said, obviously, some people might do it as a hobby. So then to them, it's more of a personal thing. So they might just do it as an enjoyment, something to do at the weekend. Obviously, they're still 100% dedicated to it, but they don't want the hustle and bustle of turning pro where, oh, shit, like, this is my life sort of thing. Where,
exactly.
They might already have a good job, good family base and stuff like that, and be happy in what they're doing. They don't really want to spend two to three times a day in the gym, working hours and stuff in the gym and stuff like that, because they've already got a good basis of what they're doing already.
Yeah, and for people like that, you know, record probably does quite matter. They are doing it just, you know, amateur will be as far as they go, so the amateur record might mean quite a lot to them. Personally, myself, I'm just using amateur to get as much experience as possible to hopefully look at turning pro whenever the coaches say I'm ready.
So, on that note, say you win the tournament on April 7th, are you going to stay at flyweight, or are you going to jump up, or are you going to stay at amateur to defend that title? Because obviously it's going to be a big target on your back as the best flyweight in the UK. People are going to be after you.
I mean, we'll just have to see. I will obviously expect to win the tournament in 2 weeks' time. I've then got another fight booked in June on the Cage Warriors Academy show in the Northwest one in Liverpool, the Shinobi show. I've got the flyweight title booked for that as well on June 2nd or June 3rd. So I'm keeping myself busy. I know what, you know, what dates I'm looking at. If the opportunity comes about to defend the Southeast belt, then brilliant. I mean, I will say this, it's a 5-6 hour trip for me down to Colchester. It's a long way to go.
Yeah.
You know, if there's somebody decent to fight, I'll fight him.
And obviously a tournament like this is a good opportunity, or good invitation sort of thing, to make that trip and make it worth your while.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I didn't have second thoughts about making the trip. It was definitely worth my time on doing it. But yeah, it's certainly not a local show for me.
Yeah, I've got a 2 hour drive to get there as well, so it's not as bad as 5 or 6. Northamptonshire, I'm from.
Oh, right, okay, cool.
So, yeah, but yeah, right. We'll talk about your dieting. Obviously, we just spoke about it. How's it going? Do you cut much weight, or do you stay as level as you can to train at the weight you are?
I mean, I do have to diet to get down to a point where I can get down to flyweight. You mentioned before, you know, we'll look at staying at flyweight or bantamweight. I think I've fought maybe seven or eight times at bantamweight, and I've done fly about 5 times. I can only make flyweight with day before weigh-ins. I have to fight bantamweight if it's same days. So there is a level of cutting there. But I try to keep relatively disciplined on my diet at all times. We've got nutritionists at IPC in Wrexham that keep me on the straight and narrow, even when I'm not. Even when I don't have a fight booked. You know, I try not to balloon up too much. I know a lot of athletes maybe are less disciplined with their diet, and so they look to cut a lot more, you know, 8, 9, 10 kilos in the week of. I certainly don't have to cut that much. I stay disciplined, try to get as low as I can body fat wise, so then I've got less weight to cut in that final week, less stress on the body, and less to do in the sauna. But if I'm perfectly honest. I'm a really quite a big flyweight. I'm 5'9", 5'10". In fact, I'm quite a big bantamweight, if I'm honest. So it's not so much that I'm small as to why maybe I don't cut so much weight. I just think I'm very disciplined and I train very hard, so I'm able to maintain quite a low body fat percentage.
So yeah, might not sound much with them 2 inches in height, but some of the guys, well, normally the guys are about 5'4", 5'5". Obviously, you said, like, you're a bigger guy. See, I'm 6'2". I'd never be able to get any lower than... Well, I do it in pounds, you see. I'm used to doing it in pounds. I'd never be able to get even close to 180. It's
just... All right, so I suppose welterweight would be out of the question then.
It's just how my body is. I could probably get close to it, but it takes some serious dieting and some serious dedication. But I'm just a fatty. I like food too much.
You won't be making your flyweight debut anytime soon then?
No. Probably 190 is my limit to go down to, but so I was talking to...
I mean, it's hard. If it was easy, everybody would do it. A lot of people do say, you know, the dieting is the worst part, and in some ways it is, but, you know, I just eat smart, I eat healthily, I get down to weight, but I still eat 6 meals a day, you know, I do okay.
So on the subject of food and dieting and stuff, what are you most looking forward to eating after April 7th?
Oh, it's a good question. Probably a bit of everything, if I'm honest. I like ale. I'm a Yorkshireman through and through, so I will certainly be enjoying a bit of ale. I've got a soft spot for biscuits in my tea as well, and packets of crisps.
Typical Yorkshire person.
I'm actually a vegan athlete throughout fight camps, maybe not so much for the ethical reasons, but again, like I say, I've got a nutritionist and there's a lot to be said for reducing your meat and dairy intake whilst you're training. It does mean that I get to consume an awful lot of carbs, which is why I've always got so much energy, why I'm able to train as much as I can. But yeah, outside of my fight camps, I'm not a strict vegan. I wouldn't say I do like to indulge quite a bit, but yeah, I reckon ale will probably be the first thing, followed by some
yeah, see, I've spoke to a few people over the past few weeks and stuff, and they've gone into this vegan dieting and stuff. Obviously, I've done one with Brad Scott, and I've seen Sean O'Malley does vegan and dieting through camps and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that must be a lot harder with what you're eating and stuff like that, to, like you say, cutting the weight and stuff like that. But then on the other side, it's easier because you're not consuming as much carbs and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, really. I think if you look at a lot of professional fighters, the top athletes, you actually find that when they talk about their diet, they mention in the final week or in the recovery stage after the weigh-in, they talk about eating, you know, a lot of high carb vegetables and stuff like that. They reduce the amount of meat that and dairy that they have post weighing, because they say, you know, the best fuel for after you've cut your water weight and you've weighed in is to obviously is to have vegetables and fruits that are high in carbs, because that's what's going to refuel your body best and fuel you for the fight. But with that in mind, it kind of baffles me that if all these top-level athletes and nutritionists are suggesting that people essentially eat vegan after they've weighed in, you know, or at least have high amounts of mainly vegetables and fruit, you know, if you did that all the way through your fight camp, surely that's going to help you feel your best throughout the entire camp. And like I say, I eat 6 meals a day, and all of that is vegetables and fruit and grains and nuts, beans, etc. But they're a lot less calorie dense, I suppose, are fruit and vegetables than meat and dairy. So I suppose that's why I'm able to eat so much and still maintain a low weight.
Good stuff. All right, I've asked everyone else this, on a different note to dieting and stuff. What gives you the edge to win the tournament over everyone else? Or why do you think you're going to win the tournament to everyone else?
In truth, I think I've got quite a lot going for me. I'm one of the more experienced guys, I'd say, in the in the tournament. Like I say, I've had 13 MMA fights now. I've also done boxing and kickboxing as well. So I've got experience on my side. I think I'm very well rounded. I mean, you hear that quite a lot. I think everybody says that. I've won the majority of my my fights by submission. In fact, I think I've won them all by submission, neither the first or the second round. But like I say, I have competed in boxing and kickboxing and won by TKO and whatnot in those. So and wrestling, I think, is probably one of my strong suits as well. As most people would agree, if you are the wrestler, you're usually controlling the game. So
yeah, it gives you a bit of
standing or on the ground.
Yeah, obviously the wrestling side of it. From my experience and what people have told me, the wrestling gives you a better cardio and energy sort of thing, because when you're training, whether you're training jiu-jitsu or even other styles of wrestling, it's more energetic than standing up and training with someone, because you're waiting for the shots. Whereas when you're on the ground, you've either got someone lying on top of you or you're on top of them, and you're using all your energy to try and either keep them down or get them off you. So training in that, or specialising in that, it gives you more cardio, so you can make it to the later rounds if need be.
Oh, without a doubt, wrestling is the hardest discipline out of the major disciplines that make up mixed martial arts. Wrestling is, without a doubt, the hardest. You know, it is the one where you are not only having to move your own body weight, but usually move the entire body weight of another person. And that really does put a lot of strain on the body. So I definitely agree that, like, whether it be in the amateur ranks or the professional ranks, you'll notice that a lot of time the wrestlers are the ones with the best cardio. So yeah, I'd agree with you there.
Yeah. So, all right, we've spoke about your dieting and everything like your prep for the tournament. Gonna have a general chat now. There's the UFC on that night as well.
Yes.
Who are you going for in the main event? Khabib versus Ferguson.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping I'm going to be able to stay awake for it, if I'm honest. Might be difficult after having three fights in one night, but we'll see. Yeah, I think, if I'm being honest, I think Ferguson has got more avenues to win the fight. I think he's got a high possibility of maybe knocking Khabib out or TKOing him, but also submitting him as well. I think if Khabib's going to win, it's probably going to be by decision or perhaps a TKO in the later rounds. If I was going to be a betting man and put my money, I'd probably go with Ferguson. I like Khabib's style. I love the wrestling style and the grinding and, you know, how he imposes his will. But I do just think Ferguson just has a couple more avenues to win, maybe a little bit more well-rounded perhaps.
For me, I like Khabib. He's just an absolute animal. He's a scary guy. Ferguson seems a bit sneaky to me. He's got stuff that's hidden away, and obviously he's so unpredictable, you don't know what he's doing. His style, he's his own style. No one even comes close to what his style is. So like you said, you think he's got more avenues to win. I think he could come at you from anyway, and he's not stronger in one than what he is the other. Like, he's not stronger on the ground to what he is standing up. He's that, to me, he's that sneaky that he could look like he's going to take you down and end up finishing you with a head kick.
You know what Khabib's going to do? You know what Khabib's going to do?
It's just trying to stop it.
Ferguson's just that's right. He's trying to stop it. Ferguson's just, he's a bit more unpredictable. I think you're right.
I think he's more well-rounded, so to speak. Yeah. So he can go wherever the fight goes. So the co-main event, Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Rose Namajunas. Who are you going for in this one?
That's a good one. I was quite surprised when Rose got Joanna first time round, if I'm honest. I did think that Joanna was head and shoulders above the rest of the division. Rose came out and obviously proved me wrong there. I'm not sure. I think if Rose able to go out and do it again, I'll be quite surprised. I think if Joanna can establish that fantastic jab and maintain a bit more of a range and a distance, we'll have a better chance. But, you know, who's going to have the advantage in the rest on the ground? I'm not sure about that one. I think if I was going to be a better man, I'd put it on Joanna, but I'm not sure.
So, like you said, she came out and surprised everyone. She surprised me as well. But I think, obviously, she's been up and down with her career, Rose. and yes, it was a sort of, I think she, it's like she'd sat at home and flipped through social media and seen what everyone was saying, and then just thought, like Michael Bisping, just thought, you know what, I'm going to prove all these wrong. And something twitched in her brain where she stepped up her game, so to speak, and it obviously it did. It shocked a lot of people. But then I was like, yeah, I thought Joanna Jędrzejczyk was above the rest, head and shoulders above the rest of the division. And then when I went back and looked at it after that loss, and then I seen that she'd gone five rounds with Valentina Shevchenko and then some of her other fights, and it was just like, there is a lot of flaws in the game. She does take a lot of damage, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. The only one that she didn't really take was the one where she beat the Ultimate Fighter winner. Can't remember her name now.
Is that, I want to say, Tisha Torres?
No, it was, I can't, oh, what's her name? Can't remember her name, but that's the only one she didn't really take any damage for. But because, obviously, she'd made that jump to UFC after winning the Ultimate Fighter, I think she wasn't ready for, like, full-time pros, so to speak, whereas, obviously, Joanna had done it in other organisations. And yeah, that was the only one Joanna didn't take any punishment. And the rest of them, she's taken a lot of punishment. I mean, she, well, in the end of the fight with Rose Namajunas, I think she ended up tapping out due to the strikes.
Yeah, she tapped out due to strikes, didn't she? Technically, that was the, that was what ended the fight. That's a strange one. I mean, that is a strange, you don't get that very often.
No.
In amateur, never mind in the pro ranks. So that's strange, is that? I'm not sure what that was about.
See, I don't think John McCarthy seen it. I think he was ready to jump in no matter what. But yeah, she definitely tapped due to strikes, which is, I don't think she's used to taking that much punishment. I think it, like the initial shots, like the head kick that started it all, I think that took her by surprise because it went through her head. Oh shit, I've been caught. Like, she's never really had that before. I mean, I know she went five rounds with Valentina Shevchenko, but she didn't sort of rock her so much that she was in danger of losing the fight. So the initial shot that Rose caught her with could have been a shock to her.
Maybe that was a shock to the system.
Yeah, it's obviously, she's never been in that territory before.
She's, I think she's come out saying, or the coach come out saying that she had some issues with the weight cut, or, you know, she really struggled with that one. I mean, you don't know whether there's some underlying issue. Maybe, like, I don't know. That could just all be a bit of an excuse, if I'm perfectly honest. But yes, I mean, you never know, do you? You would have thought by this point in her career, she's used to getting hit and she wouldn't be tapping out due to strikes. But yeah, I mean, you don't know what's going on in the background, do you? You never do, really.
See, the majority of professional fighters will say, oh, they'll live by the sword, they'll die by the sword. Some of them just say, well, I'm not going to tap out if I'm getting choked out. I'd rather go to sleep. Someone like Lyoto Machida, he'd rather go to sleep like he did against John Jones instead of tapping out. It's just the mentality of what they are. But to tap out due to strikes, you're in a striking game. Why would you, not in a sense quit, but why would you give up like that? I know you're taking damage and you want to worry about your own health, and that obviously goes through your head. But you're in that sort of game, it's, it was an easier way out for her, so to speak. But like I said, I think John McCarthy was ready to stop it anyway.
Yeah, the thing is, with in a situation like that, you would have thought if she was, let's say she knew that she'd lost the fight and she knew that she wasn't going to get back up from that strike, most of the time a fighter will just cover up until the ref calls it to feel like she needed to tap out due to the strikes. It's just a bit of a strange one. It's just, you know, it is just a bit strange. I don't really know what to make of it, honest.
But yeah, it's going to be a good event. And there's some more good events coming up as well in the UK as well. Obviously, Cage Warriors Academy, they've just announced that they're doing a massive European seven weight class Grand Prix. I'm not sure how that works. I haven't looked into it yet. I'm hoping to speak to Craig about it, and hopefully we can get involved and get some more information.
Yeah, I'd seen that come up on Facebook. I'm the same as you. I don't know if I quite deciphered it too well, because I didn't quite make heads or tails. But yeah, it seems to be that they're going to be taking some of the champions from the different academies and maybe putting them up against each other to get like a national amateur belt. I'm not 100% sure that. I'm looking forward to seeing how that develops and what more comes of that, but I don't know if we've got the full details on that just yet.
So it was something like that. Would that interest you? Obviously, you were saying that you're undecided on when you're going to go pro. A few of the other guys are. Some of them are saying that as soon as they finish this tournament, that's it. One of them's got a pro fight, their pro debut, a month after.
Oh, goodness.
They've already decided. 1 second, I've got it here. Yeah, they've already signed up for their pro debut. Oh, one of the guys that was actually meant to be in it as well, he's done it as well. Lee Mitchell, he was meant to be in the tournament.
He was meant to be in it, yeah. So he's now fighting. I want to say he's fighting Liam Gittins. That should be a that should be a fun fight.
Yeah, that's his pro debut as well. Because obviously, I got sent the list of guys that were in the tournament, messaged them all, and he was like, "Oh, I'm not fighting it anymore. I've got my pro debut." So one of my questions was, when do you make the step to pro? And he answered it for me in a message.
Well, there we go. Yeah, I mean, I think, like I say, I've go down and take the Southeast belt, and then roughly 2 months later, I'm coming back up to take the Northwest Cage Warriors belt. And then, yeah, we'll see what happens then. It all depends. I'm getting married later this year.
Congratulations.
So, thank you very much. So that's in October. So I won't be fighting within a month, because it would make for very very good
wedding photos.
Wedding photos, I don't think. So I you know,
your missus won't be too happy to either.
No, that's it. To be fair, she's an absolute pillar of strength for me. She's in the fight game as well, not as a competitor, but she is sort of professional, you know, cut staff for tournaments. So she sort of greases fires up and looks after the fighters in the cage, sorting out cuts and whatnot. So she knows all about the game. She's probably actually treated some of the guys that are fighting down in the tournament. I know that she was out in Bahrain with Ben Miles, who was also there, I think.
Yes.
For the IMAF. So yeah, she's an absolute pillar of strength for me, and to be fair, I get an awful lot of support from friends and family in all of this. I've been doing it quite a long time, and it seems to be every fight I have more and more support, more and more people getting behind me and just trying to help me out, whether it be training or dieting, you know.
Good stuff.
But yeah.
Right, if you want to shout out any of your sponsors, your Instagram and stuff like that, your coaches, you fire away now.
Yeah, maybe a little bit too old. I'm afraid I don't have Instagram or Twitter. If you just want to find me on Facebook, I'm down as Jordan the Renegade Baxter. Just give my Facebook page a like. Of course, I'd like to thank all my team down at IPC Wrexham. My coach is Aaron, Alan, John, Julian. And of course, all my sparring partners. I won't rattle them all off, but yeah, very much looking forward to the event, and hopefully I can go out and do more proud.
Yep. So good luck in the tournament. I'm coming down, so
yeah,
hopefully.
I'll see you there.
Yeah, I'm actually coming down, so hopefully I'll get to meet up with you, do some pictures and interviews with you afterwards and stuff like that. It'd be nice to meet everyone.
Yep, looking forward to it. Thank you very much for your time and doing this with all of us.
Thank you for yours as well. It's helping both of us. Good luck again. And
yeah, you take care.
Take care. Cheers.
Bye now. Bye.